This is the Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 11, man's first landing on the moon. Today, Apollo 11 arrives at the moon, and in about 4 minutes or so from now, a go, no-go decision to fire the spacecraft engine and put it into a lunar orbit. Apollo 11 is now 75 hours and 28 minutes into the flight, traveling at a speed of about 6,000 miles an hour, or 9,600 kilometers per hour, about 3,000 kilometers from the moon. The three-day flight to the moon has gone very smoothly, with no major problems. But now, let's get a first status report from correspondent Rhett Turner at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, Texas.
In exactly 12 minutes, 25 seconds from now, Apollo 11 will go out of touch with the Earth as it swings behind the moon. At this moment, it is now 966 nautical miles above the surface. It's closing in rapidly to the surface of the moon, and it has picked up speed to 7,132 kilometers per hour as it is approaching this low point going by the moon. In 20 minutes and 25 seconds from right now, the service propulsion system engine is scheduled to burn and slow Apollo 11 into lunar orbit. This is what is called LOI number one, lunar orbit insertion burn number one by the main rocket engine, the SPS. Here's mission control.
Flight controllers for the go, no-go status for LOI now.
That was Jack Riley in mission control saying that the flight controllers were about to give the astronauts the status for a go, no-go. Let's stand by if we hear any communication. That noise you hear is the air-to-ground or moon-to-earth communications link with the spacecraft. All three astronauts rather quiet. You can hear astronaut Bruce McCandless in the Mission Control Center whenever he speaks to the crewmen. The policy on all of these space flights is for one of their fellow astronauts to be what is called the capsule communicator, or CAPCOM, and to relay all messages from everyone
Apollo
else.
Apollo 11, this is Houston, over.
That's McCandless calling the spacecraft.
Roger, go ahead, Houston, Apollo 11.
That's all,
11, this is Houston. You are go for LOI, over.
Go for LOI.
Roger, go for LOI. And we're showing about 10 minutes and 30 seconds to LOS. I would like to remind you to enable the BD roll on the auto RCS switches, over.
This instruction from
the Roger, and confirm you want PCM low going over the hill, over.
That's Buzz Aldrin.
Affirmative, 11.
PCM low refers to pulse code modulation.
Roger.
In low bit rate, meaning that the data will be coming back in a superficial manner rather than detailed telemetry data. This go-no-go decision is passed to the spacecraft by virtue...
That was Buzz Aldrin confirming the go.
The data is...
If you want, I'll put it back to high until just before LOS, over.
That's Aldrin again, saying he can give them high...
Negative 11, low is okay for now, over.
High bit rate data, meaning more detailed information on the spacecraft systems, and the Earth gives them that go-no-go decision based on this data received, this telemetry data received. They've been receiving high bit rate data up to this point, and now they're about to go on what is called the low PCM transmission mode. This, of course, is quite technical, and we're trying to just interpret it for you as this is happening. Now 9 minutes until the spacecraft goes behind the moon and we will lose radio contact. According to the engineers, the flight dynamics officers, the guidance dynamic officer, the ECON or environmental control officer, all of the engineers in the flight control center here in Houston, all of that data coming back through this S-band transmission looks good. Thus, the go, no-go decision. All of this predicated by Earth monitors, hundreds of people, both in the Mission Control Center and in the support rooms outside, confirming that the spacecraft systems are in good shape. Though the three astronauts are inside the spacecraft alone watching these monitors, though they are now going around the moon, just some 966 nautical miles above the surface at this moment, they are being supported, and all of their spacecraft equipment is assisted by hundreds of people here on the ground, watching every system on board.
Rhett Turner, very briefly, for our Voice of America listeners, we should identify ourselves, Voice of America broadcasting worldwide with live coverage of this lunar orbit insertion. We have gone immediately to Houston because we will be losing signal very quickly. We will re-identify ourselves and give you further background once we do lose that signal. And we are, I guess, about 15 minutes away from the actual burn of that engine, are we not, Rhett?
The burn time is scheduled 15 minutes and 50 seconds from right now. We're watching a countdown clock on that. The loss of signal now 7 minutes and 15 seconds from now. The time on this burn has advanced 4 minutes since the trajectory of the spacecraft between the Earth and the Moon was refined yesterday and overnight. The mid-course correction maneuvers exercised in the past 2 days have actually increased the arrival time behind the moon some 4 minutes. There were 4 mid-course corrections originally scheduled, and the trajectory was so accurate and actually cut just a little time off that arrival to the point where all of the timeline of events will now be advanced 4 minutes.
Let me ask a quick question. Why do we have this loss of signal? Is this because of the spacecraft moving behind onto the backside of the moon, and it's not possible for radio signals to come back?
The moon is coming between the transmitters on the spacecraft and the Earth. Therefore, the tracking antennas on the Earth cannot see the transmission antennas on the spacecraft. And at the frequencies at which the spacecraft is transmitting in the unified S-band system, only line-of-sight transmissions are possible. They have to go straight. They don't bounce around anywhere.
Rhett, very quickly, let me introduce our colleagues here. John Hammersmith, the senior systems engineer, Donald Beatty with the Lunar Exploration Office, and my colleague Norman Guerin. All sitting here in our Apollo News Center in Washington. Rhett Turner standing by at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, and, of course, the voice of Mission Control.
Here's a burn check coming from a check on the status of the rocket.
I give you a mark of 13 minutes and 30 seconds to ignition. Okay.
That's McCandless.
And then a GET, please. No, stand by a minute.
That's Neil Armstrong responding from the spacecraft. Spacecraft descending closer to the surface of the moon now, beginning to curve around on what would be the west limb, or the left side of the moon as we see it from Earth. If you're in darkness somewhere in the world looking at the moon...
I'll give you a time hack on a GET at 75 hours, 37 minutes, and I'll try to bias it about a second and a half to allow for the time of flight.
This will come in about 8 seconds
okay.
from now.
This
stand
is just
by.
A check, isn't it?
Mark, 75 hours, 37 minutes, GET.
That's ground elapsed time.
Thank you.
75 hours, 37 minutes since liftoff from the Earth. And that.
I give you a time hack on the time to ignition at 12 minutes to ignition, over.
That'll be a half minute from now, this time hack. That's Bruce McCandless, the capsule communicator, and you heard Neil Armstrong responding there with an okay and confirmation that he received that first time check on GET, or ground elapsed time. This next time hack in about 10 seconds from now will be the time until ignition of the SPS engine.
Stand by for a mark at TIG minus 12. Mark, TIG minus 12.
That's the voice of the capsule communicator, Bruce McCandless.
Yeah, we're right on, Bruce. Thank you. Roger out.
Now, that time hack was advanced by Bruce McCandless by 2 seconds. In other words, he gave the time mark 2 seconds ahead of time to allow for the time his voice takes to get from the Earth to the Moon. There is a slight delay there. the speed of sound and radio, the speed of light, radio waves also, 186,000 miles per second.
Perhaps
and,
we
and
should.
They're beyond that distance.
Perhaps we should explain once again that when that engine is fired, it slows down the spacecraft.
We're 3 minutes away from loss of signal. Apollo 11 is 425 nautical miles from the moon. Velocity 7,368 feet per second. Weight 96,012 pounds.
That's picking up speed to some 7,000 kilometers per hour, the present speed. It's continuing to slow at this point.
And it will be slowed down to about 5,800 kilometers per hour, or about 3,600 miles per hour, once that engine is fired. And this makes it possible for the gravity of the moon to, in a way, capture the spacecraft and put it in its orbit.
It's a retrograde or braking maneuver that prevents the spacecraft from swinging on around behind the moon and heading back toward Earth.
And that orbit should be about 111 by 314 kilometers.
2 minutes to loss of signal comes the word from Mission Control. We're watching the countdown clock here also. 1 minute, 50 seconds from now. The astronauts will then be on their own. The Mission Control Center, the hundreds of bits of data information have been analyzed by the engineers on Earth, and confirmation has been passed up to astronauts Armstrong, Aldrin, and Collins that everything is go. They've gotten that decision for that go, no-go decision, the decision to go ahead with the SPS burn, the Service Propulsion System main rocket engine burn. That burn 9 minutes from now, 9 minutes, 40 seconds, and they will go behind the moon and we will lose contact with their radio signals from the spacecraft in 1 minute from now, 1 minute and 5 seconds, watching the clock tick down. If Mission Control comes in, you will hear it. We will keep that on. The slight noise you may be able to hear in the background, the slight swishing sound, is the sound.
Apollo 11, this is Houston. All your systems are looking good going around the corner. We'll see you on the other side, over.
We'll see you on the other side. Roger, came the confirmation from the spacecraft, from Neil Armstrong.
Referring to the other side of the moon.
Everything looks okay up here.
Armstrong says, Armstrong says everything looks okay up here. 28 seconds until loss of signal. Tracking is so accurate through this distance that it can be predicted to the second when the spacecraft will pass out of view. 12 seconds. 8 seconds until loss of signal is expected. 5.
There you hear it.
1 second early.
That's very accurate prediction, or computation, I should say. Well, now we will
there,
be with...
Pardon me, Bill.
I started to say we will be without signal, what, for about 30 minutes as they swing around the backside of the moon?
11 goes behind the moon.
Let's listen to Mission Control.
We're showing a distance to the moon of 309 nautical miles at LOS. Velocity 7,664 feet per second. Weight was 96,012 pounds. We're 7 minutes, 45 seconds away from the LOI number one burn, which will take place behind the moon, out of communications.
That was Jack Riley, our public affairs
officer. Here in the control center, two members of the backup crew, Bill Anders, Jim Lovell, have joined Bruce McCandless at the Capcom console. Alfred Hayes, the third member of the backup crew, has just come in too. And Deke Slayton, director of flight crew operations, is at that console. The viewing room is filling up. Among those we've noticed on the front row in the viewing room are astronauts Tom Stafford, John Glenn, Gene Cernan, Dave Scott, Al Worden, and Jack Swigert.
That's Jack Riley in Mission Control giving us a report on what the scene there happens to be. Bill?
Well, thank you, Red Turner, and we'll be back with you very shortly when we get the countdown for the burn. That's about 6 minutes away from now. Of course, we will not have communications at that time because Apollo 11 has moved to out of communications to the backside of the moon. The Voice of America's continuing coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. This program is originating in Washington. We will return to our live Voice of America coverage of the mission of Apollo 11 following this report of late world news.
Indian Prime Minister Indira Gandhi today formally accepted the resignation of Finance Minister and Deputy Premier Morarji Desai. Mr. Desai resigned after disagreements over the government's economic policies. In another development, the Press Trust of India today said the government has decided to nationalize 14 major commercial banks. Dispatches from New Delhi said Mr. Desai had been strongly opposed to the nationalization plans. Israeli Defense Minister Moshe Dayan today said Egypt may drag Lebanon, Iraq, Syria, and Jordan into a new war with Israel. He said the Arab states have decided they cannot get Israel to withdraw from occupied territory by political means and will try to force Israel out. General Dayan said Israel will need to strengthen the ceasefire lines and be ready to accept losses in men and high defense expenditures. In South Vietnam, the lull in ground fighting continued, but communist gunners stepped up their shelling attacks Friday night and early today. The U.S. command also announced the end of two American multi-battalion operations in northernmost Quang Tri province. The operations began early in May. Nigeria's top leader says he does not regard starvation as a legitimate weapon in the civil war against breakaway Biafra. The federal military leader, General Yakubu Gowon, said he welcomed all genuine and honest relief operations, but only if they started from federal territory. He said the question of security was still to be settled before a mercy corridor through the Cross River could be opened to Biafra. President Nixon paid a surprise visit to the widow of President Eisenhower in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania last night. Today he is ending a short stay at the Camp David retreat in the nearby Maryland Mountains. Tomorrow the president will hold a special prayer service at the White House for the Apollo 11 astronauts. The government of El Salvador accused Honduras of violating a ceasefire arranged for the two Central American countries last night by the Organization of American States. The Armed Forces headquarters in San Salvador said Honduran forces attacked three Salvadoran advance posts on the southwestern front and killed several Salvadoran soldiers. Though official figures have not been given by either side, news correspondents estimate that about 2,500 persons have been killed during the five-day-old conflict. The United Nations Security Council will resume debate Tuesday on Zambia's charges that Portugal bombed Zambian villages on the Mozambique border. During yesterday's debate, Zambia accused Portugal of unprovoked bombing and ground attacks, and the Portuguese delegation rejected the allegations. Thor Heyerdahl says his voyage aboard the papyrus boat Ra achieved its goal to prove that the ancient Egyptians could have reached the Americas. The Norwegian explorer yesterday abandoned his attempt to sail the Ra, the last 600 miles to Barbados. He said sharks had prevented the crew from repairing the storm-damaged craft and that he could not endanger his men by continuing the voyage. He stressed today that the boat has stayed afloat more than 2 months, and he said it would continue to drift toward Central America, and that he plans to watch its progress from a plane. The explorer and his international crew of six are en route to Barbados aboard an escort yacht, the Shenandoah. A leading anthropologist, Louis Leakey, says knowledge gained through the American space program will benefit man in many fields, especially in wiping out disease. At the same time, he warned that such developments as the atomic bomb in the hands of evil men could destroy the world. Dr. Leakey is the discoverer of the remains of the earliest known man who lived an estimated 2 million years ago in what is now Tanzania. That's the news from the Voice of America newsroom. This is Jack Weitzel reporting.
From our Apollo News Center in Washington, the Voice of America is continuing its live coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. In about 40 seconds from now, at 17 hours 22 GMT, the critical maneuver placing the spacecraft in lunar orbit, the burn of the spacecraft engine. Let's get the final countdown now from VOA correspondent Rhett Turner in Houston.
Apollo 11 is now behind the moon, out of touch with the Earth, and we're watching the clock of the expected countdown to the burn of the rocket, which will slow them into a lunar orbit. That should come in 7 seconds from now. The service propulsion system engine is expected to burn for just about 6 minutes. Zero. There should be ignition time.
75 hours, 49 minutes. Apollo 11 should have started this long burn. Duration 6 minutes 2 seconds. Delta V 2,917 feet per second. Given that burn, we expect an orbit of 61 by 169.2 nautical miles.
That's Jack Riley in Mission Control reporting that information to us. This burn lasts 6 minutes and 2 seconds, is scheduled to last that long. It should be 2,917 feet per second, slower when we hear from them again. That removes, that slows down the spacecraft speed almost 3,200
kilometers per hour. We're 24 and a half minutes away from acquisition of signal with a good burn. The clock has not yet started counting for the other acquisition time. We'll take this line down now, come back up just prior to the acquisition time for no burn. This is Mission Control, Houston.
In other words, we will not hear from Mission Control for about 23 minutes.
He's taking down the air-to-ground
air-to-ground line. Yes.
That means that he knows that there is no more communication from the moon for another 23 minutes. That does not mean we might not hear some other information from him, Bill.
Perhaps we should translate that first elliptical orbit that they would probably go into. It's about 111 by 314 kilometers. And I'm sure John Hammersmith will correct me if I've made an error in my computations here.
They made a slight change from one of the previous announcements, Bill. I have 113 by 314.
Thank you very much.
And for our English-speaking listeners, 61 by 169 nautical miles. We'll try to give all of the different systems here. The burn would continue for... Whoops, I did not get a start time when that burn started.
It will last about 6 minutes.
6 minutes,
yes. Yes, that still has about 2 minutes more to go. Now, if they do not achieve the proper burn with this rocket, if it does not slow them from some 7,000 kilometers per hour down to about 2,000 kilometers per hour, then we will hear from them. We will get acquisition of signal about 10 minutes sooner as they come around behind the moon. At 76 hours and 5 minutes after liftoff, or 13 minutes from now, we may suddenly get signals again from the spacecraft. This would indicate that they did not burn the rocket and were in a free return trajectory on the way home. If they did burn the rocket correctly, we would not expect to hear from them for 22 minutes from now.
Rhett Turner, I'm reminded by my colleagues that we haven't even identified the program yet. We had, as I explained a bit earlier, only about 10 minutes of communications with the spacecraft when we came on the air about 25 minutes ago, so that we went immediately to correspondent Rhett Turner in Houston to bring you the events until now.
Things were happening fast, weren't they, Bill?
So perhaps I should say that this is the Voice of America, broadcasting worldwide with direct coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. Today, lunar orbit insertion, the firing of the spacecraft's main engine to put it in an orbit around the moon. That event took place about 5 minutes or so ago. However, we won't get confirmation of the lunar orbit until the spacecraft returns from the backside of the moon and communications with the Earth are reestablished. That's about 20 minutes from now. At this point, I'd like to call in my colleague Norman Guerin to introduce our friends from NASA who are here with us in our Apollo News Center in Washington.
Well, Bill, I would first like to put a question to John Hammersmith of NASA. Inasmuch as the trajectory has been so good on this flight that they haven't had to use all the mid-course corrections, does that mean that they have more propellants aboard that could be very useful later in the flight?
The amount of propellants involved, Norm, are quite small. The nominal values that are set for these mid-course corrections are actually zero at the beginning of the flight. And what is set into the flight plan are the best times to make those corrections, so that in a sense the energy budget or the fuel budget merely reflects a certain contingency for those corrections.
I see. And how do you appraise the mission so far, John?
Excellent.
I'd like to introduce Donald Beatty, Program Manager, Plans and Objectives, Apollo Exploration Office. Now, you're going to be supplying us with some valuable information regarding the lunar surface. You worked very closely with the landing sites, I understand, Don. A question that I would like to ask you, all of the sites, were they based on data from lunar orbiter photographs alone?
That's correct. The lunar orbiter gave us most of the data that we needed to plot the sites and make the maps that we needed.
Well, we'll be asking you many, many questions in the days ahead. Bill, do you have any questions at this time?
One question that always bothered me, why do they choose the backside of the moon to fire these critical maneuvers? Is this, excuse me, a necessity or what? John, do you want to answer this?
It is virtually a necessity, Bill. I suppose in theory you could choose some other place to do it, but the point at which we do it is the most efficient from the standpoint of fuel usage. And it would take a short course in celestial mechanics to make it much more clearer than that.
But my reason for asking was I would think that they would want to be in very close communication on these critical burns, but in all of these lunar flights, this has been the case.
Well, you see, Bill, if we didn't do it on the backside and we waited until we could see the spacecraft, that is, see it from the Earth, then it would already be on its way home. And the amount of fuel that it would take then to insert into lunar orbit would be just fantastic.
That's right. That's what you call the free return trajectory. In other words, if that engine had not fired, that spacecraft would swing around the moon on the backside of the moon and head back for Earth.
That's correct.
Which is a safety factor on that. Well, a very good answer to that question. Norm Guerin, perhaps we'd better mention the broadcast meter bands that we're transmitting on in this worldwide broadcast.
For listeners in Europe, Bill, the 11, 13, 16, 19, 25, 31, 41, and 75 meter band short wave, and on 251 meters medium wave. For Latin America, the 13 and 16 meter bands. To Africa, the 11, 13, 16, 19, 25, and 49-meter bands. We are broadcasting to the Middle East on the 13, 16, 19, 25-meter band short wave and on 238 meters medium wave. To South Asia, the 13, 19, 25, and 41-meter bands. And for East Asia and the Pacific, the 16, 19, 25, 31, and 41-meter band short wave. Those are the broadcast bands for the Voice of America's live coverage of Apollo 11's insertion into an orbit around the moon.
While we're waiting for further reports from Mission Control, we have an interesting interview with the spacecraft commander, Neil Armstrong, that we'd like to play back for you. But before we do, I'd like to call in correspondent Rhett Turner in Houston. He has a display of the countdown clocks there, and he can bring us up to date on just how we stand for acquisition of the signal from the spacecraft. Rhett Turner?
Bill, in 6 minutes, if the rocket does not burn, we will see the spacecraft come around the east side of the moon. 16 minutes if the rocket burns properly.
We are now 76 hours, almost. No, that's 75 hours and 59 minutes, to be more precise, into the flight of Apollo 11. But let's listen now to this interview recorded by Rhett Turner a short time ago in Houston with the Apollo 11 commander, Neil Armstrong.
Neil, would you describe for us your overall role as spacecraft commander, as commander of this flight? How do you see your overall responsibility throughout the mission?
Well, in general, the responsibilities of the commander are to make the onboard decisions whenever they're required and to oversee the performance of the duties of all the crew, including himself. Now, in this particular case, I participate in those procedures on board the spacecraft as well as oversee those of my fellow crew members, and the specific tasks that I'm charged with the performance of include the monitoring of the launch, board procedures should they be required, manual flying of the booster should that be required, and taking my turn on watch in the normal monitoring of the spacecraft systems in the command module. In the lunar module, I'm charged almost nearly equally with the lunar module pilot in the operation of the lunar module systems and control of the vehicle during descent and ascent.
What is the single most important thing that you believe you have received from Apollo 10, the last flight? All of your flights lead from one to another. All of you have drawn heavily from the experience gained from other flights. Can you tell me the single thing which seems to stand out as most important that you got from Apollo 10 and its experience?
Well, the most important byproduct of Apollo 10, insofar as 11 was concerned, was the procedures which they developed to permit the lunar landing. If you remember correctly, Apollo 10 made every effort to do a full dress rehearsal of the 11 flight and to devise their procedures in such a way that they could be used word for word, more or less verbatim, on the next flight. There were a few changes which have to those procedures which have come about as a result of their recommendations after having flown that flight, and some changes that have been made to our spacecraft, the lunar module number 5, in terms of its variance from the lunar module number 4, which was flown on Apollo 10. Mm-hmm.
Just refinement of procedures in the lunar vicinity.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Thanks very much, Neil Armstrong.
Neil Armstrong, the spacecraft commander of Apollo 11. The flight of Apollo 11, now 76 hours and 2 minutes into flight. Apollo 11 now on the backside of the moon. Presumably, they have fired the rocket engine of the spacecraft about 14 minutes ago, placing it in a lunar orbit. Since they are on the backside of the moon, we're out of communications with the spacecraft. We should be getting communications now in 3 or 4 minutes. Rhett Turner in Houston, can you bring us up to date on that?
Bill, in 2 minutes and 43 seconds, we should acquire signal with the spacecraft if the service propulsion system engine did not burn properly. If it did not burn properly, the spacecraft still is in that safe return trajectory to assure that it heads toward Earth and toward a splash in the Pacific. The service propulsion system engine is a very, very reliable rocket. It's never failed yet. It's built with complete redundancy, with dual fuel lines, dual valves, dual pumps. Just about everything you can think of has a backup mode, and the astronauts themselves have extreme confidence in this engine. It has a nominal thrust of some 20,500 pounds, back in the English system here. It may be fired for 750 seconds, either full thrust or down to a minimum time period of 0.4 seconds. That is a very fast blip or actuation of the thruster rocket. Some of these mid-course corrections were canceled because only a 0.8 second burn would be needed, and this yesterday was not considered enough to cause any major change in trajectory before they reached this LOI burn, LOI, Lunar Orbit Insertion. And this, if the burn did come off just a few moments ago, would have slowed their speed from some 7,000 kilometers per hour down to about 2,194 kilometers per hour, which should be the orbital velocity around the moon. They are, by firing for six... Here's a
control.
Control.
76 hours, 4 minutes. We're about 50 seconds away from the acquisition time, provided Apollo 11 did not make this burn. We'll stand by.
And we're getting the countdown there from the voice of Apollo Control, 39 seconds from now. But anyway, if the speed did get slowed down, if the rocket performed properly in its braking maneuver, it would remove some 3,200 miles or kilometers per hour speed from the overall speed to slow it into lunar orbit. 20 seconds from now, we will stand by with Mission Control. You will hear, as we will hear, if they should come into view. 10 seconds. Of course, we don't want to hear anything at this point. That's the major issue.
When would we get a signal if...
2 seconds from now, if it does not burn. If it did not burn. We passed that time. Let's stand by for just a moment. Then apparently there was some firing of the rocket, and it should be 9 minutes and 40 seconds from now if it performed its full burn time before we would hear from astronauts Armstrong, Aldrin, and Collins again. Bill?
We'll be coming back, of course, to Mission Control in Houston and to correspondent Rhett Turner just before we acquire signal in about 9 minutes from now. The flight... Now 76 hours and 6 minutes into ground elapsed time. Sir Bernard Lovell, the director of the Jodrell Bank Observatory in Britain, has given his views on Apollo 11 in a discussion with VOA correspondent Norman Gelb in London. Let's listen to that now.
Professor Lovell, what is the significance of man finally reaching the moon?
I think it's a great turning point in the history of man. The immediate scientific result will be, we hope, the retrieval on Earth of lunar rock. And the analysis of this will be of tremendous scientific importance and will no doubt lead to the need for further expeditions to collect samples from other parts of the moon. I think it would be wrong to look on the Apollo 11 as merely an exercise whose purpose was only to get lunar rock back to Earth in order that scientists could investigate the nature of the lunar surface, however that important as an astronomer I would regard that to be. I think that in Apollo 11, where two men are going to exist for some time, and for the first time, under the gravitational attraction of another planet in the solar system, I think that this is a memorable and historic moment in the history of man. And it is very hard indeed to foresee the consequences to human society. The possibilities that this opens up are immense, not only for further exploration of the moon, the establishment of scientific colonies, scientific apparatus on the moon itself, but also, not looking too far ahead, 15, 20 years maybe, it opens in a very vivid way the possibility of manned expeditions to Mars.
Those are the words of a scientist and astronomer, a man who has been watching the development of exploration of space very closely. I wonder if it's possible for you to detach for a moment and say what you think as just a human being of the prospect of man stepping off what someone has called his cradle here on Earth.
It's very difficult for me to detach myself from being an astronomer and a scientist because I've been trained as one and lived my life as a scientist. But I read the newspapers and I understand that many people who are not scientists have a variety of emotions about this. And the most prominent emotion seems to be that it would be better to spend the money on something else for the good of mankind. I'm afraid that those sort of remarks make me very annoyed indeed, because the amount of money which has gone into the Apollo project is, although quite large by scientific standards, is contained within an entire scientific budget, which is only 3%, less than 3% of the gross national product of the Americans, and is an exceedingly small fraction of that which the American people spend on their own pleasures. And I don't think that personal complaints about the Apollo project on grounds of cost are in any way justified. It is impossible for me to step outside of this and think of it in terms other than I do as a scientist, where I have to assess the scientific value of these developments against those with which I'm acquainted in my professional life, in which the amounts of money spent, although large, are very much less. And in spite of these differences, I would still say that Apollo is a very historic achievement and will be regarded so in the context of future history as a great moment and a turning point in the history of the world.
Do you think it's possible that the Apollo 11 men who stand on the moon will discover anything of vast surprise?
I wouldn't think so. I think that the surprises of the type you mentioned have already been removed by the soft landers and the orbiters, in the sense that we're fairly certain that when the astronaut steps onto the lunar surface, he will find that it's strong enough to support him and that he won't go through to his neck or anything like that. I mean, these things were certainly in debate a few years ago, but those doubts have been removed by the unmanned spacecraft which have been sent to the moon as a facility. No, I don't foresee any tremendous surprises. I'm quite sure that when they get there and look at the heavens from the surface of the moon, it will be an amazing sight.
Thank you. I've been speaking with Sir Bernard Lovell, director of the Jodrell Bank Observatory. Norman Gelb, Voice of America, at Jodrell Bank.
This is the Voice of America's continuing worldwide coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. We are now about 3 minutes away from acquisition of signal as the Apollo 11 spacecraft comes around from the backside of the moon. And at that point, of course, we'll get confirmation on just how successful the burn of the main spacecraft engine was. It is quite apparent now that there was a burn. We don't know precisely what it was until the astronauts come back. The burn to place Apollo 11 in a lunar orbit. Let's go to Apollo Mission Control.
Watching and listening, not talking.
That conversation, briefly recapping, there are a few conversations in Mission Control as the flight controllers watch and wait. Jack Riley reported that many of them were sitting very quietly there at their consoles, watching and waiting and not talking. However, the conversation is hushed. The closer we get to this expected acquisition of signal time, the more accurate we may know that the rocket burn was. It is obvious at this point that the rocket did fire for a period of time, and that at least the orbital velocity has been slowed, that the trajectory velocity has been slowed. We don't know into what sort of orbit, of course, that the spacecraft has reduced its speed to achieve. Now, we also heard from Mission Control that acquisition of signal expected 2 minutes from right now may take just a little longer than that before the signals are locked on. the tracking stations should get acquisition of signal exactly on time, but we may not hear about it here until the antennas spend a few more seconds locking on properly.
Well, doesn't there have to be an adjustment? Doesn't there have to be an adjustment of the antenna aboard the spacecraft also?
That's right. Both on the spacecraft, the high-gain antenna on the spacecraft, and the tracking stations on Earth.
Half away from acquisition time.
Jack Riley was saying 1.5 minutes away from acquisition time.
Going to take pictures from behind the glass this time.
1:15. Now, 1:15 until we expect the first sort of signals to be coming back to Earth as the spacecraft comes around the east limb, or the east side of the moon. That noise you hear now is the transmission, the receiver coming from the Madrid tracking station for one. We know Madrid is online right now, listening, and I believe that Goldstone, California is also watching and listening. 45 seconds now until we hear from Apollo 11 and learn if it is indeed in an orbit of the moon, the first step on this final maneuvering journey to touch down on the moon expected Sunday afternoon. 30 seconds, 1.5 minutes. When signals are locked in, you may hear that noise diminish. 15 seconds. Let's just bring the noise up and let you hear with us what happens in just a moment. 10 seconds. Signal noise from space.
3 has acquisition AOS.
Of signal. That's a call from Houston and a very muddy one. Very poor signal. We can tell that Houston is calling the spacecraft. The Houston call is almost drowned out by the signal noise coming back from space. So, as a matter of fact, may my voice to you be drowned out a bit at this point. We want to hear when that signal locks in and hear the first words from the spacecraft as it comes into view. We have achieved acquisition of signal. The spacecraft has come around the side of the moon exactly on time as expected if the rocket engine, the service propulsion system engine, performed properly. So
telemetry indicates that the crew is working on the antenna angles to bring the high-gain antenna to bear.
They're waiting for that high-gain antenna to be locked in or tuned in properly before transmitting voice. Communications coming back. The astronauts are reading back figures on the burn. They're very difficult to understand. The signal is very, very noisy, but we can hear just enough to understand the astronauts reading back burn figures on the rocket. Stand by for something. We just understood that one sentence. The high-gain antenna obviously has not locked in properly yet, the high-gain antenna on the spacecraft. This is the stack of four dishes, all to be aimed back at the Earth. There are transponding instruments on the spacecraft that assist it in locking on to the interrogating station on Earth, Madrid, in this case. No communication at the moment. I do not hear any speech under that very noisy signal. I'll stand by to listen for the first clear communication. Bill?
I believe Don Beatty was mentioning a moment ago that when they come out from the other side of the moon, if the moon is shining in certain parts of the world, it is in a crescent, is it, Don?
It's a first quarter moon right now, or a fingernail moon, as some people refer to it, and the spacecraft will be coming out on the lighted side of the moon.
Rhett Turner, if you get voice there, please interrupt us. We're waiting, of course, for the voice signal to come down, the telemetry, and some voice is... there are communications, of course, but they're very noisy. They have not adjusted the antenna yet, the antenna on the ground and the antenna on the spacecraft.
I can hear one communication. I heard one call from Apollo 11, but it was very indistinct. I'll just monitor here, Bill.
And we will talk here in our Apollo News Center in Washington. We'll get confirmation from the astronauts of the precise orbit. It should be about 110 by 314 kilometers. That orbit, by the way, will be circularized by firing that spacecraft engine again in about 3.5 hours, a little more than that. And this is to prepare it for the big day tomorrow, Sunday, for the descent to the moon. Perhaps while we're waiting for signal, we could talk a few minutes, Don Beatty, about that, what we'll be doing on Sunday. The first thing, of course, would be the undocking of the spacecraft, the lunar module we call Eagle, from the mothership Columbia. Want to pick it up from there?
Well, then they'll start a slow descent to the lunar surface. And this will, of course, be happening on the back side of the moon, part of it. They'll have to come around from the back of the moon, going in towards the landing site. As you look at the moon, it would be from the right-hand side of the moon towards the center. And looking for their landmarks as they come down, checking the status of the spacecraft, and ensuring that they're on the proper course.
Well, what will the surface look like at that landing site? We call it landing site number two. This is a part of the Sea of Tranquility, is it not?
That's right. It is in the Sea of Tranquility. We had two landing sites selected in the Sea of Tranquility.
Let's go back to Apollo Mission Control.
Time, and that was about it. Send the whole thing again, please. It was right perfect.
There is the signal.
Burn time 557. CAD values on the angle. VGX minus 0.1. VGY minus 0.1. VGZ plus 0.1. No trim. Minus 6.8 on Delta PC.
That is Neil Armstrong.
Fuel was 38.8. Mach 39.0. Plus 50 unbalanced. We ran an increase on the pug. Now 44. Showed us in a 60.9 by 169.9.
That's Neil Armstrong,
Roger,
the command pilot.
Your burn status report.
His quote was, "It was like perfect."
And,
it was like
the spacecraft
perfect.
Is looking good to us on telemetry.
That's Bruce McCandless, acknowledging Neil Armstrong's.
Everything looks good up here.
Report. Neil said everything looks good up here.
They are.
That high gain antenna locked in well here now. It really came in fast and with just a click of a switch.
That burn report was by Neil Armstrong.
It was almost like a click of a switch when we finally got that strong signal. And that call went from Houston. Houston said, Apollo 11, Apollo 11, do you read? And all of a sudden there was Armstrong's voice with the words, loud and clear.
So we have that confirmation, official confirmation of the Apollo 11 in lunar orbit, and apparently he says it was perfect. It should then be about 110 by 314 kilometers, an elliptical orbit around the moon, traveling at about 3,000 kilometers per hour.
According to Armstrong's onboard figures in nautical miles, 60.9 by 169.9. the Earth trackers, the flight dynamics officers here, with their radar solidly locked on now, will, within the next few minutes, give the Earth's version of that orbital parameter. And then it takes about 25 minutes for the flight dynamics to get a refined trajectory.
The onboard numbers, Red, are very, very close to the numbers they were aiming at.
You mean it would only be a kilometer or two off?
Not even that much, fraction of a kilometer.
They were aiming for 61 by 169 nautical miles. They have 60.9, which is one-tenth of a nautical mile off, by 169.9. That's nine-tenths off on the high end, or apogee end.
Then, John Hammersmith, our kilometer translation is still
our
correct.
Kilometer translation is pretty good.
113
it is, yes.
By 314.
Yeah, well, that 0.9 on the high side there will probably throw everything off, Rhett.
Well, let's see how close the onboard figures are with the FIDOs, the flight dynamics officers. They call it taking a fast cut, taking a cut at the tracking figures, and within just a few minutes after acquisition of signals, they come up with this first cut. But then it takes about 25 minutes for a refined trajectory analysis. This according to Phil Schaffer, the chief flight dynamics officer, down in the front row of the mission control room.
Well, gentlemen, we'll be leaving the air very soon on this special broadcast. Rhett, if there are any changes, please interrupt us. We have passed, though, the third critical phase of the flight of Apollo 11. A successful firing of the main spacecraft engine. This placed astronauts Neil Armstrong, Michael Collins, and Edwin Aldrin in an orbit around the moon of 113 by 314 kilometers. In about 3 hours and 38 minutes from now, they will fire the spacecraft engine again to put themselves into a near circular orbit of about 100 by 122 kilometers above the surface of the moon. This in preparation for Sunday's descent to the moon and man's first landing on the lunar surface. Tomorrow, Sunday, the Voice of America will begin continuous coverage for a period of 28 and one-half hours, beginning at 17 hours 30 GMT. We will cover live the undocking of the lunar module from the command ship, the descent and landing on the moon, the two-hour and 40-minute walk on the moon by astronauts Neil Armstrong and Edwin Aldrin. That all-important firing of the ascent engine, the rendezvous and redocking with the mothership Columbia. Repeating once again, the Voice of America's live and continuous coverage of the Apollo 11 lunar landing events will begin Sunday at 17 hours 30 Greenwich Mean Time. So this about concludes our live coverage of the lunar orbit insertion of Apollo 11. We will interrupt our regular broadcast schedule at any time to bring you further developments in the flight of Apollo 11. My thanks to my colleagues here at the VOA Apollo News Center in Washington, co-host Norman Guerin, John Hammersmith, Senior Systems Engineer, and Donald Beatty with the NASA's Lunar Exploration Office. And at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, correspondent Rhett Turner reporting. This is William McCrory in Washington. This program has come to you from the United States of America.